Welcome to Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Howdy, everyone.
Hey, remember when we told everyone to not jump off a ledge, Dan? That like a week ago?
I would still advise that no one literally jumps off a ledge. And even basketball-wise, I think we're like peering over and like considering maybe on like a bad day, but yeah, I mean it's right across our mind, but I don't think we're in full ledge mode yet.
No, we're measuring the drop and like what that might mean, and maybe the repercussions of it. But yeah, I don't think we're there yet. It was something I tried to emphasize. I think like over the weekend, I know I posted something and Andy posted something on Monday, just kind of talking about like where our chances lie. And I still think if we win the game we're supposed to going forward, and supposed to, I understand, includes in my case Florida State, a game that right now we're not favored to win. But I think if we go 2-1 and grab a win in the ACC tournament, that should be enough to get us in, especially given this year's pretty weak bubble.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I mean, obviously one game doesn't necessarily mean that the same thing's going to happen next game, but it's not like Syracuse didn't handle Florida State pretty easily before. So while it'd probably be a little naive to just assume that the same exact thing will happen twice in a row, we've seen, you know, season series where both games are blowouts in opposite directions, but I think that there are still a couple of very winnable games, but also I don't think there are any that, I mean, Boston College is, we're done with them. So NC State's not a great team, but they've won some, or they've, you know, been very competitive in a lot of games this year. And I don't think there's anyone we can really take lightly, but I also think they're, you know, Syracuse is still, there's wins on the table to be had. It would be nice if we could steal a bye here. I know we've slipped down a ninth in the ACC, so getting back up into the 5-8 range would be nice.
Yeah, and I mean, you and me have talked about this. Like, the ACC is super deep. I know, even if we slip to ninth, do we still get a bye just because Louisville's out?
I have no idea. I totally forget.
I mean, the last time, I can't remember the last time we were involved in a postseason, like, well, is involved in a conference championship tournament that didn't have a team out.
Let me see what last year's, because last year we were out, so same thing.
Yeah, and then the year before that was somebody, right? No, was a full tournament. But then the year
it was
last year,
Maryland,
the Big East,
instead of Louisville.
Oh yeah, the last year of the Big East, somebody was out, right?
UConn,
West Virginia, or UConn?
Well, last year Big East, West Virginia had already left.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But I don't know. There was some weird stuff. Was I don't remember. It was so long ago now.
Fair enough. Different life.
I'm trying to find a bracket from last year. Overall, like, I just, you know, would like to have that bye, and I don't know if we'll even get in a hugely advantageous matchup, but
that's the problem at this point. I feel like no matter where we finish, and we're destined to finish somewhere we don't want to be, is that we're looking at facing a team we just don't want to face in that first game.
All right, so it looks like 10, like, basically the top 10 all get a bye, because there's two. There's 12, 13, and 11, 14 that face in the first round on Tuesday. So if we finish ninth, we'd be facing the eighth place team, which is Clemson.
Gotcha. But then do we move up to eighth because Louisville's out?
Oh, good call. So we'd be eighth, so we'd be facing the ninth place team, which is Virginia Tech. Like, there just really isn't, like, none of these teams,
no,
even the ones we beat soundly. There's none that are like, I mean, unless you want to slip down and face BC, which I don't want to fall that far.
But if, like, we do, just, then we're already out. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. It's like Virginia Tech plays us tough. Obviously, we you know, pulled away pretty late last time. BC we handled this year, but we're not going to play them. Georgia Tech, we only beat by three, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's not – there's no obvious answer here. So I think we just want to try to take the draw as we get it.
Yeah. I guess slight sidebar while we're here. Remember that time we were all saying that Nova's garbage? Look at the scores.
I cannot wait to pick a 7-10 seed to beat them in the first round or second round of the tournament. It's gonna be great.
Oh yeah, and
very excited.
I think any 7 or 10. You know what? I don't want it to be us because I like Villanova's chances to beat us, but at the same time, it'd be so entertaining to be that 7 or 10 seed.
I have the exact same feeling. Like Villanova, stylistically, like they put a lot of shooters on the floor. We know they know how to play the zone, although they kind of go in between being really good and really bad against it. But also, like, just being that spoiler team for them, knowing that, you know, we're not the biggest of rivals, but I'd say we're still rivals as much as two teams that don't play every year can be. And and I don't think they would like losing to us at all as a one seed. I think that would be very annoying to them. Maybe not as bad as, like, if they yell us to UConn again for, like, the 8,000th time, but I also don't want, like, UConn to get the glory of that either. So I think I'd settle for that over playing, like, a Kansas or a, like, an Oklahoma or a couple other.
I pick any of those. I pick Villanova, hands down.
Yeah. I think you just gotta take them. Like, not all these teams to beat us, but I think I would take my shot with the Wildcats.
Yeah, I buy that. All right, so I guess, diverting back to the games at hand instead of projected ones that could happen, but probably not. You mentioned NC State's a little feisty. Obviously, Cat Barber is a little bit dangerous. But outside of him, I mean, NC State really became a one-man team this year, which is surprising because I don't feel like anyone really saw that as an outcome, especially when NC State looked very good last year. In the tournament, they seemed like a team that was maybe prime. I mean, yes, they lost some talent, but they looked like a team that could, you know, finish middle of the pack. No pun intended, in the ACC, and, you know, do their usual grab, like a somewhere between 7 and 10 seed and maybe pull an upset. But, you know, this year's team, 3 of their 4 wins have been sizable upsets in ACC play. And that's where, you know, I think not luckily, but because we lost the last two games, I don't think anyone's looking past State, but I think a lot of people until last week were very, very anxious to look right past NC State, you know, into those last two road games against UNC and Florida State.
No, 100%. And they've, like, their struggles this year have been very strange, I think. I don't know if they were a great team, but I thought they'd be a tournament contender. They have some very interesting players. Cat Barber, if the team was better, he'd be a player of the year candidate in the ACC. So yeah, it'd be very silly to just assume that that SU will beat State, especially because State's played SU really tough the last couple of years. We've had some nightmarish games against them.
We really have. I mean, we haven't beat them. Have we beaten them in the last at least two seasons? I mean, I know we had, last year was a blowout, and the year before that we had the really messy game in the ACC tournament, but I forgot what happened in the regular season. Wasn't there like some fluke?
We beat them on the there was some like weird last second play.
Oh yeah, that's
Tyler Ennis' team. It was kind of controversial, but not like super controversial.
It's controversial if you don't really know what controversial is.
It also happened like right before, it was like right in the same vicinity of
the Maryland game, right?
Of the Maryland game and also the Pitt buzzer, the Ennis like miracle shot. So it was like that stretch where we kind of saw the wheels coming off, but we also kind of chalked it up. Yeah, we all kind of adored it and said, oh, this team just knows how to win, which, I mean, I think they kind of did. It was a 56-55 win. It was a game that made us 25-0. And then the next game we lost to BC, and then we lost at Duke.
And we lost to Georgia Tech. And then the wheels not only came off, they were
blasted by Virginia. And then we lost to NC State by 3 in an awful game that I was at in Greensboro.
I love that team so much, yet whenever I look back at them, even 20, 30 years from now, I'm just going to be angry.
Yeah, and 25-0, like, just starting 25-0 is so special, but then to lose your last, let's see, 6 of your last 9 games, like, that's rough.
That's trash, yeah.
And the Duke game, which obviously mitigating circumstances, which BS. Virginia was just really good that year. I can excuse, like, that game was close for a while and got away from us. But then Georgia Tech wasn't a good team.
No.
NC State was okay, but, like, that was a rough loss. And then the Dayton loss. Like, all those,
We had every right to beat Dayton, too, especially after what we did to Western Michigan just, like, a couple days before.
Yeah, so, like, even if SU got lucky in the Pitt game and the NC State game and a couple of the others, the Duke overtime win, like, five of the six games that SU lost that year were by single digits and were absolutely brutal. The only game that was, like, a straight-up – I mean, I don't really remember the Georgia Tech game too much specifically. It was a five-point loss at the Dome, but the Virginia game was, like, the only one where we were just totally outmatched. Like, the other five games were all, like, heartbreaking losses.
Yeah. No, I said I'm always going to have a weird relationship with that season, and I'm sure a lot of SU fans feel the same. Catching up to the present day a little bit, and, yep, Nova lost. catching up to the present day, Dan, do you find it weird, like, at least as weird as I do, that Pitt's being given all this credit for improving their resume with a quality win against us while we're being blasted for losing the game? It doesn't seem like you can have both sides of that coin.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it probably has to do with the final score, which was a bit, it's a bit misleading. They won by 14, but it was one of those where the last, like,
Pitt game.
Yeah, like, they just ground us into submission, and then the game was close for most of it, and then they just, you know, we didn't hit free throws, and they ran away with it at the end. But I don't know. It's a little bit weird that I feel like Syracuse is, like, the way people have treated Syracuse all year has been kind of weird. Not like a bias thing or anything, but Pitt, like, really does not have a lot in its resume aside from beating SU. It might pick up a nice win in Louisville tonight. But, like, looking down, their only other big wins, like, they beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame, which is great. And, yeah. Like, they have some other, like, okay wins. Like, they beat Georgia Tech, which isn't great, but it's something. They beat Florida State. They beat Virginia Tech by a lot. But other than that, like, this Pitt never plays a ton of out-of-conference challenges. They played Purdue and lost pretty handily, and that was the only big game. I guess they played Davidson, who's not that good this year. So, you know, Pitt has two head-to-head wins over Syracuse, and if I'm on the committee, that makes it pretty tough to put SU in ahead of Pitt.
Right.
But Syracuse is all, I mean, aside from the Notre Dame, it cancels out. We both beat Notre Dame by a lot. Actually, no, they only beat Notre Dame by four, but it was on the road. But, you know, that maybe that wipes, those two wipe each other. But other than like, you know, Pitt has a head-to-head, which is great, and that probably should trump everything. But Syracuse's resume is a lot better overall.
Yeah, I mean, other than the losses, and I think that's really where, like, we get dinged. The fact that we have more losses, I mean, we probably are due for at least one more this season with North Carolina. I think that's where a team like Pitt, and, you know, and maybe another bubble team, not in the ACC, has an advantage on us, is just in the loss column. I think that now, you know, you and I said this, and others said this too, the ACC did kind of cannibalize itself, and I think we might be looking at, I mean, in a worst case scenario, this could be a six-bid league.
Yeah, I won't, you know, really complain if Pitt was dead and over SU and SU got left out, like, if that's one of the teams. But overall, I mean, I don't think it's, like, a total, like, I don't think they're a lock by any means now if they don't do, you know, what they need to do down the stretch. They have at versus Duke, who's playing good ball now. They're at Virginia Tech, which is no gimme, and then they're at Georgia Tech, which is, you know, they should win that, but, like, they could finish 1-2, and they could lose tonight, and it's Louisville, who they are tied with last I looked at 52. So I don't know. They're right there with us, I think. Unfortunately, I wish we had split those two games, because then it would be a lot easier to argue.
Oh yeah, and I mean, at that point, a 9-6 Syracuse team is looking at potentially jumping Duke and Notre Dame if the cards fall right. I mean, North Carolina, you know, they look fine, but I think Miami is within striking distance. Even if, you know, all things considered, Miami, I don't think, is a Final Four caliber team. I mean, that loss last week to the Heels was pretty much a backbreaker. But nonetheless, they're still within a half game of UNC, and UNC doesn't have an easy schedule. And Miami, you know, really took care of business against University of Virginia.
Yeah, the whole ACC is just, I mean, it's very indicative of how college basketball is this year. I mean, the Big 12 is probably the best league, but it's also hard to judge when a lot of like the big wins are coming against, you know, one another. It's really hard to figure out exactly if the league's just as good as it seems to be, and you know they play exciting games. I mean, I'm all for promoting the Big 12 just as like it's been a blast to follow, but you also, you know, it's hard to judge when so much of the quality wins, like all these close teams are, you know, coming against one another. So maybe that league's overrated, maybe the ACC's underrated, or maybe, you know, everything is as it seems. But overall, college basketball is just like really hard to beat on. So I think anyone who says that they know exactly which teams are for sure going to make runs of the Final Four are just lying, because none of them look like a sure thing at any by any means.
No, and you know what? Like this year's ACC, and we've probably said this a couple times throughout our tenure here so far, but I think this year, most importantly, really does look a lot like the old Big East, just in terms of, you know, just like what you were just describing, teams really just beating up on each other, and then everyone just goes, well, like, if you had to face that many great teams, like, you'd do, like, that, and that grind of a schedule, like, you know, you'd suffer three or four losses in league play, too. Let's just give them all the bids and see what happens. Now, obviously, for the Big East, that didn't always go well, in part because the tournament committee decided to pit Big East teams against one another, but... yeah, I think it's going to be very telling in the postseason to see where these teams can go, because I do think while there's a lot more maybe flow and pace to the game in the ACC this year than there was in some of those latter years of the Big East, where it was just an absolute grind. I still think this schedule has, especially how it was constructed with a lot of these, you know, 3 games in 6 days type things for a lot of teams, could really take a toll, and not one that you really want, you know, out of your top contenders in your conference.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that the powers that be kind of heard Boeheim's complaining, because I think we said it the last couple of weeks. Like, I get that he's a complainer, but also the concerns are quite valid. Like, it's some of the things that have happened with the schedules, and it's not just Syracuse. It's just the way the ACC has scheduled for some reason. Are just like really strange. The two stretches that he complained about with the 4-10 and then the 3-6 or whatever, like it just doesn't make any sense. When then we had like a nine day stretch of being off, we could have slid 2 games into that period and just totally, you know, alleviated ourselves of so many of these issues.
No, absolutely, and that goes right back to the like, okay, well, if you're going to talk about, you know, student athletes and all this other crap, like that sounds nice, but then in practice you don't believe it, so like, you know, I guess where does the hypocrisy end?
Yep, and that is the story of the NCAA. And by the way, Louisville is up 6 with 19 seconds.
Well, there you go. I guess one other thing on Syracuse, we talk a little bit more about the ACC at large. Dan, do you think that there's a situation in which Syracuse beats North Carolina but loses the other 2 games, that North Carolina win supersedes the 2 losses?
That's a good question. I don't know. The UNC win would be very nice. They're going to be a top-10 team by the time the tournament rolls around. I think I'd rather have the 2 other wins just because it gives us, you know, they're all kind of the same in terms of ACC posturing, and I'd rather have a chance to pick up an ACC tournament win and make it 3 than, like, run the risk of maybe a harder ACC match, but that might not even matter. So, I don't know. I think I'd just rather have the 2 wins. I'd rather get closer to the. I'd rather get the 20 regular season. But you could argue it either way. I don't know how the committee will view it, because NC State and FSU at FSU wouldn't look like a terrible win, but they're on a real slide. Like they've lost 4 or 5 in a row. Basically, I don't think they've won a game since we beat them.
Yeah.
And NC State's just, like, they're 14-13. They only won 4 games in conference. I think that would look like a pretty bad loss. But this year, the bubble might just be... I mean, Syracuse's main strength in terms of its resume is its quality wins.
Right.
So maybe UNC would top that off, you know, with adding to the Duke win, adding to the Notre Dame win, the Texas A&M won earlier. So it's a good argument. I would lean towards taking the 2.
I think that's fair. I think, and you know what, like... SU does have a weird resume, and I think it's going to be weird for the committee to kind of consider. I mean, again, we don't know what they're going to... They keep saying things about Boeheim's absence. We don't really know what that's going to mean. But if Syracuse were to beat North Carolina and lose the other two games, hypothetically, who would have a better collection of, you know, victories, like quality victories, than win over Notre Dame at home, win on the road at Duke, win on the road at North Carolina, win over Texas A&M on a neutral floor. I mean, who knows what Wisconsin's going to turn into? That was the loss. I mean, I just think that there is... I would challenge most teams in the same position as us to come up with a better collection of wins. And I would bet anyone looking at the 10-11 line is that a large team probably doesn't have that sort of resume, Pitt included.
No. Pitt has the head-to-heads, but other everyone else, I mean, we've looked at some of those teams. I think maybe last week we were looking at like the Floridas and looking at the 7 through 10s here. Syracuse probably fall. South Carolina, I mean, they feast on a really weak schedule to start, and they've kind of fallen apart down the stretch. Seton Hall, nothing really too impressive. I think they beat maybe one of the two Big East teams, but you know, nothing great. Providence, same thing. Like these aren't really super quality resumes here. I mean, Wichita State is a 7 over in St. Louis. Not to like jump right into this, but none of these teams have the wins that Syracuse do. Now, a lot of them probably don't have a loss to St. John's, because not a lot of teams in basketball have a loss to St. John's this year. St. John's is awful. But, you know, I think if I'm a selector here, knowing that all these teams are very flawed, none of them have, you know, that are in this like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 range are like perfect and obvious. I think, and I could be totally biased, but I think I'd lean towards the ones that have the better wins versus maybe the ones that just held serve against whatever dreads they scheduled and didn't really beat anyone impressive. Because at least you know Syracuse can get up and really challenge anyone, even if they could also fall on their face.
Yeah, I buy that. I guess before we might go halftime bracketology, then football, we'll see. I know College Game Day last week really shed all over Boston College, and rightfully so, but they talked about football and basketball. And I kind of tweeted out after the fact, because Wake Forest, you know, really took, I know Blogger So Dear, SB Nation's Wake Forest blog, you know, really seemed to take, you know, the current AD to task and talking about, you know, their struggles. And I mean, you and me saw Wake as a competitive team potentially this year, at least a team that would finish, you know, somewhere in the 10 to 12 or maybe 14 at worst case range, but probably 10 to 12 in the ACC, and they've been miserable. I mean, Dan, do you think that this is kind of a now or never time for Syracuse and on the court and on the football field, that we have a golden opportunity to really separate ourselves from the two most similar institutions? And I mean, I, at least for me, like I saw this as it's now or never. Like we need to jump and jump very high to just distance ourselves from those two, because at the end of the day, I think even if Dino Babers is able to turn things around a little bit, even if Mike Hopkins is able to maintain a similar-ish trajectory to what Chitten Boeheim's done, I still think that looking overall at the institutions, I think SU is still going to be compared to those two. Have those two firmly entrenched on the bottom, I think only serves to help us.
Yeah, I mean, in basketball, I'm not too worried about it. I don't think, you know, Wake had some really, really good days in the 90s and when Chris Paul was around in the 2000s, but they haven't been that program in a while, and Syracuse has consistently been pretty, you know, better for the last 15 years, I'd say.
Right.
And Boston College, you know, doesn't even have the highs that Wake basketball does. Football, I think it's a better, you know, focus, and I'd say it is a prime time. I mean, Syracuse should be on the rise, because it can't get much worse than it was the last 2 years. They have an exciting new coach. They seem to be embracing kind of modern football and have the facilities to make those things very exciting and make them successful. Where Wake, you know, who knows when this rebuild gets out? I'm not sure that they should be selling this early on. What's his name?
Clawson,
right. They're like the same person. and BC, I mean, I think it'd be pretty foolhardy to totally jump off the Adazio train, because he has been fairly successful compared to, you know, what BC's ceiling is for the most part, but another bad year and I could see Adazio really being on the hot seat. So I mean, I think for in football especially, it is a really good time because I know that Babers has said that the rebuild at SU might take a little longer than what people would probably hope, but I also think he might just be, you know, he doesn't know exactly what he has yet. He's just getting this team on the field now. It wouldn't shock me if Syracuse is, you know, competitive or better than those two teams this year. At Wake, we haven't had any trouble with in any year, even when Syracuse has been pretty bad. In BC, obviously, we handled this year and a couple of years ago under Schaefer. So, yeah, if SU can really distance themselves from them and kind of claw its way towards that Louisville NC State tier in the Atlantic make sure there's some real distance there, I think it would be a good thing, especially because we do recruit against those two teams a lot, especially Wake Forest. It seems like is always popping up on the same list as SU.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I think that I think Louisville is very quickly putting itself on a different tier. And it's not the Florida State Clemson tier, but it's probably hanging around because of the money they're willing to spend on athletics and football in general. I think they're probably hanging around the North Carolina, Miami, Virginia Tech tier in the ACC, which is not a bad place to be honest. I think Duke is probably like another year or two away from there, just for consistency's sake. But yeah, if SU can get to the NC State tier, which is kind of like the lower, I'd say maybe like Duke, NC State, and Pitt are probably like that next grouping. If SU can play itself up into there, I mean, two guaranteed wins a year would help. It's interesting. I feel like, you know, when we hired Schaefer, when Wake Forest hired Clawson, when, you know, BC hired Adazio, everything seemed to indicate, okay, these three teams are going to be on similar trajectories and have similar outlooks with promising coaches. And it's interesting now that we were the first to fire, but I feel like we're going to be the quickest to get up because, like, Clawson's doing better. Their defense is vastly improved, but the offense is still stagnant. And Clawson, one of his things was offense, and that team just hasn't been able to compete there at all. Can't compete for recruits, can't compete on the field. It's been pretty bad. BC, you know, offense was never their calling card, but from a just effectiveness standpoint, I mean, it's one thing. Like, I think one of the Adazio teams, I forgot which one, at Temple, like, kind of took a step back, but you didn't see it in the metrics as far as, you know, plus-minus and offensive efficiency, things like that. With BC, you saw an absolute crater last year, and yes, there were injuries involved there, but recruiting took a huge, huge hit as a result. If these young kids who were all playing last year aren't able to you know, take a step up from freshman to sophomore to junior year, the BC is suddenly, football-wise, and it's funny because we're literally like 14 months removed from singing Adazio's praises. We're like, BC is in dire, dire straits.
Yeah, it's weird because you thought like that game where they beat USC is a win that Syracuse has been looking to get for a long time. And obviously USC didn't end up being that great, but it's still USC. Getting them to come to Boston College is actually even kind of a, you know, makes me feel not great, although they were supposed to go to Syracuse, and it wasn't USC that changed the deal on that and made that a MetLife game. But, no, it is interesting, and it shows you how quick these things can change, because BC did seem to be building something. But I also thought BC's game was kind of a, you know, they might top out at like a 7-8 win team. They play power football, but, you know, when a big high-flying, you know, into defense, but when a really high-flying offense that could mitigate those defensive advantages comes in, you know, they weren't going to compete on a talent level with Florida State and Clemson. At best, they could muddy it up, which they even did last year. So, I mean, I'd much rather go the route that Syracuse is going, where it's, you know, trying to compile as much yardage and points and, you know, play a really exciting brand rather than, you know, hoping to drag things in the dirt and win on punts and forcing turnovers and getting some luck. So, but, you know, Adazio, I do think I wouldn't totally write him off yet. I think it's early to do that, but I think he's playing a game that requires that there's much less of a there's less of a I'm totally losing words.
It's
right
now.
It's kind
of a margin for error, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like exactly what I was trying to say. There's a very small margin of error playing the type of football that he likes, and that's, you know, what we saw with Schaefer. Same thing. I think Adazio's a more proven coach. He's done it at Temple. He's done it a couple years at BC. But I like the more analytical approach that I think Babers takes, and that's been proven at two stops with him, and obviously we've seen what Baylor has done. And while Syracuse isn't going to be getting Texas athletes anytime soon, I think the general concepts will work as long as the players buy in.
No, I completely agree there. And, you know, it's interesting. I feel like Addazio is coaching like a Big Ten coach. And in the Big Ten, that works, even for the, you know, terrible teams like Purdue and largely Indiana and Illinois, because you still have access to that talent base. And you know, BC, on the other hand, doesn't have access to that talent base, seems to struggle to recruit within its walls and outside of them. I don't really know, to be honest, like what BC's like calling card is in terms of like recruiting area. I think they do some work in PA, but that's really, they're not on anyone's radar. And I think last year's cratering was just the worst timed thing for them. I think the same thing for Rutgers too. I mean, at least they made a coaching change, but ill-timed. And to be honest, like, I think if Addazio can even get them back to 5 or 6 wins next year, I could see him taking the Illinois job and just saying, you know what, like, I'm not dealing with these unrealistic expectations at BC. And that may be the right or wrong move for him and the university. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure what the expectations are, at least coming from the athletic department, but there have been, like, rumblings there could be changes there, too, and we've kind of seen firsthand what that might mean. So it will be interesting to see what happens with him if they choose to part ways, because I think there is a lot to like with what Addazio has done. You do want it to stay competitive, and they seem to be going the wrong direction. At least, you know, it's very small sample size with BC, but the returns the last year or two haven't been the greatest, especially offensively. They've just been such a mess since they've lost, you know, if they don't have like a game-changing running back, things haven't worked.
Too true. And on that, we'll go to halftime. Dan, what have you been drinking?
Not a ton of new things, but the real highlight was last weekend I got to try the Westbrook Brewing's Ghosts,
so good,
which is fantastic. Like you, I think you said, it was one of the better ones that you've had. We've had a couple Westbrook things before. I know we had, when we met up in New York City a couple months ago, we had the Mexican cake, which was wonderful. This I like Ghosts a lot. This was definitely one of the better ones I've had. It's quite sour, but really drinkable, really refreshing. And Westbrook just seems to do a really great job with pretty much everything they attempt, which is pretty
good deal. And yeah, I would have to agree. Every time I go to North Carolina, see my parents, it's one of the first things I do is stop by one of the local bottle shops in Raleigh near the airport and try to grab some of that and some of the other staples down there. Some things that I had last week, I had Fruit Cart from Monkish, phenomenal beer, like a fruit loaded sour, from them. Just really, really good. Only 100 bottles made. Just really enjoyable stuff. Tried out Stone's, Americano Stout, just their stout brewed with espresso. Thought it was good. I mean, it was no Founders, breakfast out necessarily, but didn't have to be. Had FV1 from Beechwood Brewing. It's a double IPA. Had a bottle of Yellow Rose from Lone Pint down in Texas, product of a trade partner. Thanks again, Tim. It was very good. And I think Yellow Rose doesn't really get outside of Texas, but for those who have had it or have an ability to acquire it, I would highly recommend it. It's, again, from Lone Pint. Very, very good stuff. And besides that, I just kind of ended up going back to Smog City and Monkish again, which is kind of what I do lately. And had a lot of Snugglebug and Cuddlebug. And those two beers, I could pretty much just swim in and be happy.
Not a bad thing. Although swinging beer, you know, who knows if that's the safest thing.
But probably not.
I trust your judgment, John.
Most people don't. Moving on to bracketology a little bit before we maybe talk some spring football. Try to keep this lighter than last week. I know we ended up going into like double overtime on this one. But looking at the latest, and again, this is not a direct endorsement of ESPN or Joe Lenardi. In fact, it's almost talking about it despite them. But looking at the most recent one, dated February 22nd, which is a couple days ago, East bracket first. Dan, I'll start us off. Villanova facing a 16-seeded Bucknell makes me laugh so hard. Because if there was ever a year that a 16 could beat a 1, that would kind of be it.
Yeah, I know this isn't like quite the same Bucknell team we've had in the last couple of years with Mike Mastala, who was there, who was really good. I would still go with Villanova.
Sure, but this is not a bad Bucknell team.
No, not at all. Bucknell's always pretty pretty feisty in the tournament. Yeah. So I'll go with Nova, but I do think there is some comedy potential there. And leave it to Lenardi to obviously find the random Pennsylvania matchups.
True. So I'll take Villanova. I'll probably go with Pittsburgh, and then I will begrudgingly pick Pittsburgh to beat Villanova. Actually, no, I won't. I'm actually going to believe in Nova past round two somehow. See, this top part of the bracket's tough. I really want to believe in Iowa State, but as we discussed last week, that's not an option. So in that case, Purdue, you're headed to the Elite Eight somehow in a year you don't deserve to. And you will be facing Michigan State, and Michigan State will beat you and get themselves to the Final Four. I'm pretty convinced of all of that.
Let's see. Yeah, I really like how that worked out for Michigan State. Miami, I think, you know, I like Miami a lot. I like what they've done this year. I think Michigan State seems to be coming back into their own after the Denzel Valentine stuff earlier, all of his injury issues. Out of that top part, I really like Purdue. I think they've played pretty good ball this year. I think it's A.J. Hammond, the center, is quite feisty. I agree with you on Villanova. I really don't like Florida or Pitt this year, really. And Pitt, it's the NCAA tournament. They turn into a pumpkin every March. So,
like, are these the worst 8 and 9 seeds you've ever seen?
They're pretty bad. This is, again, like, every time I see Florida as an 8 seed or something, I'm like, yeah, no. Syracuse didn't get in. Florida's
like Wisconsin's an 8.
Good. Yeah, Wisconsin's an 8. They haven't had they were like totally out of the tournament until 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, not too worried about anyone there. So if Villanova does make a run, it's because, man, the tournament just not impressive. But I like Purdue. Iowa State, I've learned to just not believe in March. They've burned me too many times. And I'll take Michigan State over Purdue in a Big Ten matchup in the Elite Eight.
I think that's – I could buy into that. I think the one – thing that gives me a little bit of pause on Iowa State is the fact that Hoiberg's not there anymore. But at the same time, Hoiberg wasn't there when they lost to Hampton in like 2001. So yeah, I think the ruling against Iowa State stands. Moving to the Midwest, Kansas-USC could be a fun game in round two, but I think that this plays out pretty favorably for Kansas to get through. Dayton, I might have believed in a couple weeks ago, not now. Arizona, I don't buy into at all. Down at the bottom, I really wish that Maryland and North Carolina were in different brackets. Colorado is definitely going to upset South Carolina in that 7-10 game. I do like, and again, I really wish North Carolina wasn't in this bracket, and same goes for Maryland, because I feel like Kansas, North Carolina, and Maryland could all be Final Four teams very easily. But I'm gonna go with UNC over Kansas in the Elite Eight.
It's kind of a bold one. Let's see. I know you've been a big USC proponent this year. I think they are pretty interesting. Dayton, not that impressed with. Arizona, I really don't have a good read on. I feel like they're just kind of hanging around that ranking because they haven't done enough to fall off of it. They've been kind of in the, you know, in and out of the top 10 all year. But there's definitely not as good as the last couple Arizona teams.
That's the problem with the West Coast basketball this year, is that there is no elite team. So then, like, nobody stays up to watch because there is no elite team. And then, like, the entire Pac-12 is, like, you know, riddled with, like, stupidity. The West Coast Conference, you know, wouldn't be able to field in a large team if it needed to. There's just not enough out here right now that makes you want to pay attention to Arizona or anyone else.
Yeah, I think that's a good good point. Same with like Utah. Like Utah looked pretty interesting early in the year. They have Poitel, who's pretty one of the better centers in the league, but they just can't seem to consistently build anything this year. And they're a six, so again, all you need to know. And Maryland at a three. Maryland's been free falling for 2 or 3 weeks. So I think North Carolina has a really nice path to the Elite Eight. I'll take Kansas as well. I'm going to take Kansas over UNC. I just feel more comfortable with them.
That's fair. I just know Kansas does that thing every few years where they just completely, you know, fall flat. I don't think it happens against any of these lower seeds, but I think North Carolina is a possibility.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, we'll see. Down in the South, Virginia elevated to a one seed. I don't buy that for a second. That said, really, really want to see Virginia VCU. You know, I know Shaka Smart's not there anymore. It doesn't matter. I think they'll play with enough pace to make it interesting with Virginia. I think they win. I think a Shaka Smart VCU team wipes the floor with Virginia. I really want to pick Valpo over Indiana. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I'm going to take Kentucky out of this top part. And again, I hate sounding like Kentucky homer because I hate the Wildcats, but I'm taking Kentucky over Virginia to get into that Elite Eight spot. And down in the other part of the bracket, I am picking West Virginia over Xavier to get into that Elite Eight matchup, with Kentucky beating West Virginia as a kind of payback for the 2010 loss at Syracuse.
Let's see. My browser is being weird. Oh, yeah, we're in the South. It's funny that Virginia is still number one. I feel like Virginia's just totally flown under the radar this whole year. And maybe it's because they haven't been quite as good in the regular season as they have the last couple. I'm going to take them. Indiana, I don't know what to do with. Indiana looks so good some nights, and then they're just
scream.
Absolutely dreadful other nights, especially away from Assembly Hall. So
this year is peak cream. Like, this is the most cream season they've had.
I don't know on a week-to-week basis if cream's going to, like, get fired at an extension. Yeah, let me see. I'm trying to find their home away splits. They're on the road, they're 4-4. Yeah. At home, I think they might be undefeated.
Really?
What's their overall record?
I don't know.
All right, no, they're 22-6, so they're like 18-2 at home, and they've only played 8 road games, and they're 4-4 on the road. So they're not going to play at Assembly Hall in the tournament, so that's a big factor here. Kentucky, I think, always afraid of them in March. They haven't really failed to live up to expectations at any point in the tournament under Calipari, unless you thought like the John Wall team should win it all. Or last year, I guess, but they still went to the Final Four. So I'm going to go with Kentucky versus Indiana. That's also a rivalry game, and Kentucky would like nothing more than to just like punt Indiana across the court. Which they probably would. Although I think that could be a fun game if Indiana comes to play. I'll take Virginia over Kentucky, although I don't feel great about it. I just think that their style might give that really young Kentucky team fits, especially on defense. And then in the bottom, Xavier was really impressive tonight. One of the first times I've really seen them, like, extended portions of their game. They really, like, Villanova, they held Villanova by, like, 10 points the entire second half. Notre Dame, I think, been kind of a fan of them. They play really good offense. West Virginia does not play very good offense. They play really ugly, scrappy ball. But I could see that being kind of effective against some teams, but also the tournament, things get called tighter. I could see that being an issue. I'm going to take I'm not really buying into Wichita State. I'm going to take Notre Dame and Xavier, and I'm going to go with the Irish, and then I will take Virginia narrowly over Notre Dame in the Elite Eight, all ACC.
All right. Moving out to the West, spoiler alert, I'm taking Oklahoma to get through this bracket in any case, but I definitely like the matchup between them and Duke. in a potential Sweet 16. Obviously, that's dependent on the team's health. If Duke, you know, keeps losing players or struggling to keep guys on the court, you know, you could see that team definitely fall off that four line. Down at the bottom there, I don't buy the Zags as an at-large, and Lenardi's a clown for putting Gonzaga in there as an at-large. Well, maybe not a clown, but he's stretching it quite a bit. Same goes for Cincinnati, to be honest. But whatever, that's why this bubble's so weak. So I'm going to go with, out of that small pod, I'll go with Oregon, but begrudgingly, out of the Spokane area. I like Syracuse to upset Providence. I just don't think we can hang with Iowa. And the Iowa-Oregon matchup that, honestly, if those two teams were in any other bracket, I'd probably have them losing in the second round. I'm going to have to put one of them in the Elite Eight, and that team will be, for some reason, Oregon.
You're such an Oregon fan, I'm not surprised. this is a pretty tough bracket, I think. Because
they all suck. Like, I could easily see Cincinnati or Gonzaga running through this entire bottom half of the bracket.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you could go a lot of different directions. You could buy into UConn, Devil Magic. You can buy into Wisconsin kind of finding their way. I'm going to take, out of the top half, I'm actually going to go Duke over Oklahoma. I just have a feeling that it's going to come together for them. They're playing better as of late. Emile Jefferson looks like he's going to come back before the end of the regular season. I know he's been practicing, and he seems to be almost ready to go, and that would be a big boost for them. So I love Oklahoma. I would hope they would win that. But I just, you know, it's hard when Duke gets rolling. In the bottom, I'm going to take Syracuse over Providence. I'm going to take Syracuse over Iowa for no logical reason. I'm just going to do it.
Fair enough.
I'm going to take Texas out of Spokane. And screw it. I'll take Syracuse to beat Texas and lose to Duke in a surprising and kind of annoying Elite Eight game. I just, you know, I really like what Shaka Smart's done. They look really awful to start the year, Texas, and he's really gotten them going. But they're like, I think when teams don't face the zone a lot in the tournament, I think it can be a problem. And that would be what they would be doing in the Sweet 16 in Syracuse. So I'll take the homer run here. I think it's the first time I've done that in all the weeks we've been doing this. So why not do it after we've lost a couple games and everyone's, you know, bailing on the team?
Yeah, I can't really argue with that logic. I mean, last time we faced Texas in the tournament, things went pretty well. So
yes,
maybe we capture some of that. So yeah, your Final Four is some mix of Michigan State, Kansas and North Carolina, Virginia or Kentucky, and Oklahoma or Duke. So I'd say no real surprises there. I think there's some more interesting picks than others, but I think that that's a fair group, and I would think a lot of brackets would have any of those eight teams in there.
Yeah, I think we're a little more interesting this week. Like we said last week, I think depending on how Lenardi puts these, we're either kind of in agreement all the time or we kind of vary. I think this was a little more interesting. It's always funny to see how he games these matchups, though.
Oh, yeah, I mean, without a doubt. I mean, the Syracuse-Providence thing in Iowa is hilarious. Just for the, I mean, if SU had ended up in the Big Ten, it would have been incredibly funny. Just because of location, obviously opponent. So there's a lot of entertaining matchups here. The shitty part is too, like, you look at all these 5-12s and I actually think all of them provide a lot of intrigue, but I just think the fives are just overwhelmingly better because, again, of how light that bubble is. But yeah, we can,
It's a really bad 12 line. Now that you brought it up, trying to think of which ones.
I don't mind Arkansas, Little Rock, and Valpo, though. But it's just like those fives are just too good for them to beat.
Yeah, like Valpo is going to be the one that everyone picks, but Indiana, like, they either that would be a hilarious cream game or Indiana would beat them by 30. Indiana is such a bizarre team. I really do think this Indiana team could be like the make or break one for cream. Like, if they don't play up to potential, like, I don't think they'd fire him at this point, but he'd go into next year really needing to do something. But they're super talented. They're probably one of the five most talented teams in the country, I think. So,
well, if they lost to Valpo,
then it would be interesting.
Then he's fired. Here's this Crean situation for you. There's two funny situations that I can see. Either Indiana wins against Valpo but loses to Stony Brook. Or Indiana beats Kentucky but then loses to Texas Tech.
Those would be so cream.
I mean, yeah, that would actually be peak cream more than anything.
I think the most likely funny cream thing would be Indiana just like absolutely beating down Valpo and all the Indiana fans getting just super amped for the Kentucky game, and then Kentucky just goes and rolls them by like 35.
Yeah.
Like Calipari and Green just, I mean, I know the Indiana with the one win with the buzzer beater, which was awesome, but that just, it's unfortunate they don't play every year anymore, and that's a ton of BS, and it's mostly on Calipari, but it would be a very, it'd be how the narratives of John Calipari and Tom Crean are supposed to play out.
I buy that. Another funny Crean scenario would be Indiana gets itself to the Elite Eight and loses to Notre Dame.
Yeah, that'd be fun too. Indiana basketball.
Indiana basketball standpoint. All right, and that's all for college basketball this week. Spring practice. Dan, what'd you take away from kind of the snippets we received from day one of spring Babers ball?
Eric Dungy's more of a Netflix guy, ladies. So that's good to know.
Ask him if he wants to chill. I'm sure he'll say yes.
Yes. There hasn't been a ton. I mean, it's very interesting with how Babers is approaching it. I mean, he seems to really be giving everyone a blank slate. Obviously, all indications are that Dungy will retain the starting job, as I think we all think he should. And he was kind of lately complimentary of him. I think it'll really get heated up next week once we get the pads on and we hopefully get a little more out of Dino, because right now it's just been, you know, light drills and just some implementation. But it seems like everyone's pretty happy with how things have gone so far in terms of speed of practice and everything. But I don't think we've heard anything that's too outside of expectations. You know, practices are faster. I really enjoyed Steve Ishmael calling this an up-tempo offense versus last year, which was a slow tempo offense, I think is what he said, which is hilarious and not necessarily untrue. And I know he didn't mean to like make that a knock, but no one's ever said in football a down tempo or slow tempo offense and meant it as a compliment. So that was fun. But I think we'll really know more next week once the players get the pads on and hopefully Babers is a little forthcoming and willing to get people excited for the spring game in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's the big difference here. You're seeing it on social media. You're seeing it elsewhere. Like, there's a lot to just – Babers understands that you got to win over this fan base right now. And I think even if the wins don't necessarily come on the field this year, I think he understands that they need to come off the field. I know I said in the Slack room earlier this week, but I think Steve Ishmael is going to be a really fun quote this year. I think for some reason he's decided, like, this is the year of Steve, that he's just going to open up and start being, like, incredibly funny and, like – saying like ironically entertaining things. Like there's a lot there, and I think that like the players under Babers already seem like they have a little bit more personality you know than they might have under Schaefer, who I feel like kept everybody very anti-media and a little more lock and key, at least from my standpoint.
Yeah, I noticed that with Ishmael especially, because he's been very reserved so far at SU. And actually, for a second, when I watched a video interview of him, like, I didn't even realize who it was for a second. I had to know, like, basically, you know, he also cut his hair. But, like, he was always one to give very, you know, short kind of, you know, not curt or anything, but just very, you know, simple answers. He wasn't going to really bring a lot of personality, but he definitely seemed more upbeat, maybe because he knows he's going to catch, like, 95 balls this year. I think that would get anyone a little excited. But I'm really excited to see what he can do. He's the closest thing SU has to a game-breaking talent. He's gone up against the best corners in the ACC, and he's, you know, done a pretty good job in an offense that really wasn't designed to give him, you know, a ton of looks. I mean, we were pulling our hair last year over some of the games where he just was getting four targets and catching three passes for 40 yards. So, I mean, hopefully Babers has identified him pretty early and knows that he's a guy to build the offense around, and hopefully Steve will keep on giving us some gems.
Oh yeah, and like not to make this, but maybe make this like the last 10 minutes about Steve Ishmael. But like, you know, we said every week, he really is the guy. And like everybody, you know, at Media Day last year seemed to be very honed in on, like around the conference, honed in on the fact that Steve was a potential breakout guy. I think he still is. You know, this year, you look at like his numbers definitely went up last season, despite, again, like minimal use. You look at Syracuse's record books, though, and this is, I was going to write about it this week. I decided I'm going to wait till the summer. You look at the record books for Syracuse and receivers. There's not a whole lot of guys that, you know, have caught over 100 passes in their careers or have, like, really put up a sizable amount of yardage or touchdowns through the air. I mean, we've never been that sort of, you know, just aerial attack offense. And, like, even some of the greats at SU just haven't really hit those, like, huge number plateaus. I think, you know, Steve is a golden chance here. I mean, if the guy catches 80, 90 balls this year, he's going to be, like, top five on just about every receiving list in SU history with a chance to break pretty much every record next season. I do think that, you know, I didn't mention this in the receivers article just because I feel like it's an article in and of itself. Like, I think Ishmael's – this offense's ability to use Steve Ishmael can make or break this team. I think if they can't use Steve Ishmael, it's either a testament to being slow learning on the system or a lack of talent at other key positions.
Yeah, it's interesting to note because so much of, you know, the great receivers in SU history played either under Pasolini and his team, which ran, you know, a lot of option, a lot of running, and it was just the 90s. There was a much different game. A lot more down the field throwing versus, you know, quick, high, you know, up-tempo offense. So even a guy like Marvin Harrison wasn't going to get a lot of chances to, you know, catch a bunch of 8-yard out routes and do a lot of those things. He's going down the field and looking for more big plays while they run like the freeze option and everything. So, and then obviously Art Monk was a totally different era, but those are two of the greats of all time. So there is a lot of room in that record book for Ishmael if he fills a role that like Roger Moore or one of the other I think was it Roger Moore or that was the Bowling Green wide receiver, is that his name?
Yeah, I want to say yes.
Yeah, so I mean Bowling Green was incredibly incredibly prolific, and their receivers, it's Roger Lewis. I was mixing him up with Ronnie Moore, and I gave you a James Bond actor. So I knew, I was like, there's no way that it's also Roger Moore. It's Roger Lewis, Ronnie Moore, both Bowling Green players last year. Both receivers, I think. But no, I think this offense is one that's tailored to putting up big numbers. And that's not obviously not the end game. It's not to get, you know, Steve Ishmael 100 catches, but it's just something that could happen very easily if this offense starts to click quickly this year. And we all like big numbers. They're fun. Yeah. They're easy to sell.
Yeah, we've never really had them, so that'd be nice. I guess closing on one of my favorite topics around SU football, what the hell is this team going to do with Jamal Custis this year?
Who knows? Like, honestly.
Maybe nothing. Again. No, honestly, like this, I mean, you saw last year, like, I forgot who it was. I drew a direct comparison to somebody on Bowling Green, and I think in general, like, you know, Custis had, like, that one game where, like, you and me said it, like, on the podcast the next week. We're like, oh, great, like, Syracuse decides to use Jamal Custis, like, inside the five, and he catches a pass, like, on the first try, like, and we don't have to worry about, you know, feeding Dungy to the Wolves trying to run it in. And then we literally never saw him targeted again.
No, because why do something that could possibly be useful? I assume that, I mean, we saw him in some of those videos, so I assume Babers knows who he is, might know his name by now. It would be great. I mean, Babers just seems like a guy who can find ways to use guys effectively. And we saw Bowling Green, obviously his offense is totally different than what we've seen the last 3 or 4 years, but he didn't recruit a lot of those guys either. Those were players that were left behind from Clawson's staff. So I think that we'll find that Babers, you know, finds unique and useful ways to use the players that are given to him. He's been really successful at it so far. And again, like the first two head coaching jobs he's had to do with, he's won his division every time he's been, which I don't think is going to be realistic this year. But he's done it by inheriting players that were left behind and finding ways to use them to the best of their abilities. And I think there are a lot of useful players in the Syracuse offense that he'll hopefully find some interesting roles for.
Yeah, no, and you know, I think another player before we leave that's worth at least thinking about is, you know, I mean, Dan, do you think Mo Neal ends up seeing the field this year? Or do you think that he's a prime redshirt candidate along with Riley and maybe some of the other guys? Just because of the glut of players we have at those running back and wide receiver spots?
It's hard to know. I'd be fine with either way. I think he's really talented, but he seems like he might fill kind of the same roles as Irv Phillips, who it sounds like he's been playing a lot more receiver than anything this year, which I don't necessarily know how I feel about, because I thought he was a better running back, but I'll trust Babers here. It seems like we just have a lot of bodies, so I mean, if Neal's better than them, I use him. Like, just as long as you're going to get the number of touches to make it worth it to burn his redshirt, I'm fine with it. But it's hard to tell without, you know, actually seeing practice. But he will have a jump since he's there already and he's enrolled and practicing. So I think if they can carve out a use for him and they're not going to give him, like, you know, 20 touches during the year, then I'm all for it as long as he has a legit role.
Completely agree. It's a good place to end it. You know, I think we get a nice little upbeat football note. We didn't get overly negative about basketball. All around good podcast, Dan.
Thank you, and to you as well. Hopefully we have some good basketball, you know, actual basketball, not just podcasting, this weekend, and get everyone back ready to go for March.
Please, yes. And on that note, we'll wrap up here. Everyone, thanks for tuning in, as always, to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe over on iTunes, on Blog Talk, whatever device you're listening to or service you use to listen to us on. Dan, thanks as always for joining.
You're very welcome. Go Orange.
Go Orange. Hey. Want to watch me make dinner? Probably not, but maybe.